I'm Father Ron Shibley, founder and director of the Anglican Internet Church. I welcome you to episode 6 in the fourth edition of the AIC Bible Study video series, New Testament Gospels. In episode 6, my focus will be on some unique features of St. Matthew's Gospel and selected memorable sayings and quotations that are unique to his account. At the end of the episode, I will point out where material presented in episode 6 is discussed in the new AIC bookstore publication, The Gospel of Matthew, Annotated and Illustrated. I begin with comments on St. Matthew's text of the long-form version of the Lord's Prayer. There are two versions of the Lord's Prayer in the New Testament, one in Matthew 6, 9-13, and the shorter version in the Gospel of St. Luke. The difference between the two versions is the doxology in Matthew 6:13, which echoes St. Matthew's theme of kingdom, here using the text from the 1928 Book of Common Prayer, "For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory, forever and ever. Amen." The illustration is the Lord's Prayer, an opaque watercolor over graphite on gray wove paper by James Tissot, painted between 1886 and 1894 from the collection of the Brooklyn Museum, Brooklyn, New York. The kingdom line repeats a prayer found in the Didache, which is Greek for the teachings of the apostles, thought to have been published before St. Matthew's Gospel appeared in the mid-first century. It is possible that the final line was added in later manuscripts and was not part of the Hebrew or Aramaic version of the Gospel of St. Matthew. In Anglican usage, both versions are used. However, the shorter Lucan form was the preferred version in the first Book of Common Prayer in 1549. The illustration is the first line of a copy of the Didache, made public in the Western Church for the first time in 1873 AD by Philotius Byrrhenius, Metropolitan of Nicomedia in Asia Minor, who found it in the Byzantine archives at the Jerusalem Monastery of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Constantinople. It was first published in the United States by Johns Hopkins University in 1875 AD.
The file includes many important early church documents, including the Epistle of Clement.
St. Matthew's version of the Beatitudes, or the Sermon on the Mount, in Matthew 5:1-12, includes 8 declarations, or definitions, concerning the state of blessedness. The version in St. Luke 6:20-26 contains only 4 blessings. The real distinguishing feature between the two is the tone and not the length. St. Matthew's account is expressed in distinctly spiritual terms, referring to a blessing to be received in heaven rather than a benefit to be received on earth. The illustration, the Sermon on the Beatitudes, is another opaque watercolor from the pen of James Tissot from his Life of Christ series in the collection of the Brooklyn Museum. Here is the first of 2 examples. In Matthew 5:3, Jesus says, with emphasis added, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." The shorter wording in Luke 6:20, "Blessed are you poor," is often said by secularists to refer to poverty in the earthly sense. The second of 2 examples is Matthew 5:6, in which Jesus says, emphasis added, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled." In St. Luke's account, Jesus says, "Blessed are you who hunger now, for you shall be filled." A hunger and thirst for righteousness is a quite different concept than the mere lack of sustenance suggested in the shorter version. Again, the difference in the text is not about length. St. Matthew's version of the Beatitudes, consistent with the tone of his gospel, deals with the spiritual character of mankind and its relationship to God and not just to anyone's social or economic or political status. Other unique content in the Gospel of St. Matthew includes 11 parables which do not appear in the other two synoptic Gospels, that is, those of Mark and Luke. Several of these are kingdom parables, or short teaching lessons on the theme of the kingdom of heaven, another theme of St. Matthew's Gospel, delivered only to the disciples after the crowds had gone away. They were spoken while in the region of the Galilee, in the second year of Jesus' ministry as an adult. The parable of the wheat and the tares in 13:24-30 and 36-43, the leaven in 13:33, hidden treasures in 13:44, the pearl of great price in 13:45-46, the dragnet 13:47-50, and the householder 13:51-52. Only the first, the parable of the wheat and tares, is read in Sunday Holy Communion services in the 1928 Book of Common Prayer. The illustration is a set of stained glass windows at Scott's Church, a Presbyterian church in Melbourne, Australia, built between 1871 and 1874. Other examples of unique parables are the unforgiving servant in chapter 18, verses 21-35, which includes the famous exchange with St. Peter concerning forgiveness, in which the phrase 70 times 7 is used, the laborers in the vineyard, or the first and the last, in chapter 20, verses 1-16, which is the gospel reading for Septuagesima Sunday. The illustration is one of three miniature illuminations on a page from the Codex Aureus of Echternach, made at the Abbey of Echternach, now in Luxembourg, but then part of Germany between 1030
and 1050 AD, from the Germanische National Museum in Nuremberg, Germany.
The faithful servant / evil servant in Matthew 24, verses 45-51. The wise and foolish virgins, chapter 25:1-13, and the talents, 25:14-29, all of these on the theme of the responsibilities of stewardship or of the preparation for judgment. The illustration is the parable of the wise and foolish virgins, a pen and watercolor illumination on paper after the style of William Blake, painted around 1826 AD, from the collection of the Tate Gallery in London, England. The Gospel of St. Matthew contains many memorable phrases not found in other Gospels. Many of these are the words of Christ spoken in less formal settings, in words less sweeping than in the Beatitudes, and in which offer moral instruction for daily living. The illustration for this and the next two slides is Christ Pantocrator, a Byzantine temper and gilt on panel icon at the Monastery of St. Catherine, Sinai, Egypt, the oldest known icon of Christ, traditionally said to have been commissioned by the Byzantine Emperor Justinian in the 6th century. The lessons begin with the instruction that murder and adultery begin in the heart. In Matthew 5, verses 21-30, the rules for divorce in chapter 5, verses 31-32, the prohibition against swearing, not including legal oaths, in verses 5:33-37, the guidance to go the extra mile, which is Jesus' explanation of a Roman law requiring anyone to travel a mile when asked for help by Roman authorities, and it is found in chapter 5, verses 38-42. The advice to love your enemies and bless those who curse you in chapter 5, verses 43-47, and instruction to do your charitable deeds in secret in chapter 6, verses 1-4, and do your fasting in secret in chapter 6, verses 16 to 17. The latter two instructions are an indirect criticism of the self-righteousness of the Pharisees, another constant theme in the Gospel of St. Matthew, which reaches a peak in chapter 23. Other moral advice on living is found in the lessons on the narrow gate or straight gate in the King James Version versus the broad way that is found in chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. And here is verse 13, "Enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate that leads to destruction." This is not quite the same point as is made in Luke 13, verse 24, which refers to end times. St. Matthew's context is the Hebrew tradition of Psalm 1, often called the Two Ways Psalm, and many other Old Testament writings in the world divided into two groups, the godly and the ungodly, or the righteous and the unrighteous. Psalm 1 offers rules for the godly who will standeth not, sitteth not, walketh not in the ways or the company of the ungodly. The illustration is the cover of an American edition of Psalms published in the early 1600s and open to Psalm 1. Jesus and the disciples were in the region near Capernaum in the final months of 29 AD when St. Matthew recounts Jesus' advice on another area of moral instruction on confession and discipline in the church. In Matthew 18, verses 15 to 17, Jesus offers help for the kind of disputes which troubled St. Paul with the church at Corinth. He counsels the resolution of personal disputes between the parties, then with witnesses, and then within the church community, implying an avoidance of courts of law. This lesson includes one of the only two uses of the word church in the Gospels, with the other use also in the Gospel of St. Matthew, in which Jesus refers to my church in Matthew 16, verse 18. The Greek root word here is ekklesia, which means a place set apart, usually for worship. It is the Christian equivalent of the synagogue. Church is widely used by St. Luke in Acts of the Apostles, by St. John in Revelation in the instructions to write to the seven churches of Asia Minor and his other epistles. The illustration is St. John commanded to write to Ephesus and Smyrna from the Bamberg Apocalypse as used in the AIC bookstore publication, Revelation, an Idealist Interpretation. In the same discourse with the disciples on discipline within the church, Jesus grants them the power of, quote, binding and loosing in verses 18 to 19. Assuredly, I say to you that whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. This grant of authority is similar to the authority to forgive sins granted to the disciples in John 20, verse 23, the scriptural foundation for the sacrament of confession penance. The illustration is the Christ Pantocrator Apse Mosaic at the Basilica of the Cathedral of Cefalù, Sicily, with seraphim in the background, built in the 12th century by the Norman King of Sicily, Roger II. In the final line in this discourse of Jesus with the disciples, in verse 20, Jesus uses a phrase which is found nowhere else: "Where two or three are gathered together in my name, I am there in the midst of them." The choice of where and not when in this quote is seen as a validation of the Christian concept of the church as the place where the faithful gather to worship. The illustration is St. Paul's Cathedral, designed by Christopher Wren in London, England at Christmas AD 2014. Two other memorable phrases refer to aspects of discipleship. The first is Matthew 9, 36 to 38. The harvest is truly plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into the harvest. The second is his statement in Matthew 10, verses 24 to 26, that a disciple is not above his teacher, reported elsewhere only in John 15, verse 20. Although I have mentioned the attacks upon the Pharisees in previous episodes, no discussion of St. Matthew's Gospel is complete without specifically mentioning the memorable and sharp accusation unique to the Gospel of St. Matthew, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites!" It is spoken by Christ 7 times in chapter 23, in verses 13, 14, 15, 23, 25, 27, and 29. The phrase, and others like it with variations, is used repeatedly in chapter 23 to condemn the Hebrew leadership for their misleading teachings concerning God's law. The illustration, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites," is another opaque watercolor by James Tissot from the collection in the Brooklyn Museum. I turn now to 4 incidents reported only by St. Matthew. The first 3 are miracles, and the 4th is an event. The first is Jesus' restoration of the sight of the 2 blind men, one of whom acknowledges Jesus as Son of David in this unique dialogue, "Son of David, have mercy upon us," they ask in 9:27, to which Jesus asks in 9:28, "Do you believe I am able to do this?" When they reply, "Yes, Lord," in verse 29b, Jesus touches their eyes and commands, "According to your faith, let it be to you." He then commands them to tell no one. The men's reference to Son of David is consistent with St. Matthew's kingship theme. The illustration is an engraving by German artist Julius Schnorr von Karlsfeld from his The Bible in Pictures, originally published in Germany in the 1850s and reprinted in 1873 in Russia. The second example is Jesus' healing of the mute and demon-possessed man in Matthew 9, verses 32 to 33. St. Matthew observed that those who witnessed the healing observed it was never seen like this in Israel, but that the Pharisees present, all that they could say was, "He casts out demons by the ruler of demons," in 9:34. The King James Version says, "the prince of devils." The illustration is another of 240 engravings from Julius Schnorr von Karlsfeld from his Bible in Pictures in the 1873 Russian edition. The third example is the curious story of the payment of the temple tax, with the coin found in the mouth of a fish near Capernaum, reported in chapter 17, verses 24 to 27. The local authorities demanded payment of the temple tax, and after an exchange between Peter and Jesus, in which Peter confirms that Jesus, implying that it is he who owns the temple, does not owe the tax, Jesus instructs Peter, "Nevertheless, lest we offend them, go to the sea, cast in a hook, take the fish that comes up first, and when you have opened its mouth, you will find a piece of money. Take that and give it to them for me and you." The illustration is an illumination in colored inks on paper of Peter paying the tax with the coin from a collection of amusing stories in Latin and German assembled by Augustin Tunger and published in Konstanz, Germany in 1486 AD. The fourth and final incident, which is an event and not a miracle or a sign, is St. Matthew's unique account of Jesus' attempt to return the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and scribes, saying, "I have sinned by betraying innocent blood." And they said, "What is that to us? See to it." Then he threw down the pieces of silver in the temple and departed and went and hanged himself. The death of Judas is described in a different way in Acts 1, verses 18 to 19. The relationship of this account to St. Matthew's theme of the life of Christ as fulfillment of Old Testament prophecy was discussed in episode 5. The illustration is a 16th century fresco based upon St. Matthew's account at Tarsiste Monastery, Strupe, Bulgaria, which honors the prophet Elijah. The final topic in this episode and in the discussion of the Gospel of St. Matthew is his account of Jesus' final discourse with the disciples and its theme of judgment based on works. The NKJV Study Bible calls St. Matthew's Gospel the Gospel of Judgment. I've included this in a separate category because although it is in the form of a parable following after the parable of the talents in 25 verses 14 to 30, it is far more than just a parable. The setting is the Mount of Olives in Jerusalem.
This final discourse is also known as the Olivet Discourse and is the last of the five long discourses in the Gospel of Matthew.
The time is just before Passover, Tuesday or Wednesday of Holy Week in 30 AD, 1 or 2 days before his betrayal by Judas Iscariot on Maundy Thursday. The sole audience is the disciples. The illustration is a detail from Jesus' discourses with his disciples, another watercolor by James T. So. The account opens with images consistent with the kingship theme which was woven into the fabric of St. Matthew's Gospel. In it are several key words which Jesus used frequently and which St. John would repeat often in Revelation. Son of Man, Jesus' name for himself, plus the phrases glory, angels, heaven, throne, and judgment. When the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then he will sit down on the throne of his glory. All the nations will be gathered before him. That's chapter 26, verses 31 and 32a. The manner of judgment prefigures the imagery of the I am the Good Shepherd declaration in John 10. It also contains a reference quite familiar in the Hebrew tradition, another characteristic of St. Matthew's Gospel, and in the Nicene Creed of the place of honor on the right hand of God. And he will separate them one from another as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats, and he will set the sheep on the right hand, but the goats on the left. St. Matthew's theme of the life of Jesus as fulfillment of Old Testament prophecy is affirmed in verse 34. Then the king will say to those on his right hand, come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. The message in this discourse, coming as it did just the day after his condemnation of the narrowness and false righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees in chapter 23 and discussed earlier in this episode, is that judgment will not be based on the narrow legalistic concept of righteousness advocated by the Pharisees, who had actually calculated that there were exactly 613 commandments and not just 10. Instead, in verses 35 and 36, Jesus offers a list of the necessary works which demonstrate faith, feeding the hungry, giving drink to the thirsty, giving shelter for the homeless, clothing to the naked, visiting the sick and those in prison. Next in the discourse, Jesus speaks aloud the unspoken doubts of the Pharisees. He does so in the Hebrew teaching style of reinforcing an argument by speaking it in two groups of nearly identical verses, in this case 37, 38, and 39, and again in 42, 43, and 44. Jesus answers their doubts with this moral instruction, first expressed positively in verse 40, then expressed negatively in verse 45. First, verse 40, and the king will answer and say to them, Assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these my brethren, you did it to me. And now in verse 45, then he, the king, will answer them, saying, assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it unto me. In the missing verses, 41 to 46, he continues teaching in the Hebrew style of instruction with two warnings of the fate of those who fail the works test expressed in his right hand, left hand symbolism from verses 32, 33, and 34, and which is echoed, as noted earlier, in the Nicene Creed.
In verse 41,
he says, then he will say to those on the left hand, depart from me, you cursed, into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. And in verse 46, and these will go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous to eternal life. I hope you've enjoyed and learned from this series on the Gospel of St. Matthew, in which in episodes 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, I have reviewed the four major themes of St. Matthew's Gospel: the origin of the name Jesus in the Hebrew tradition, the genealogy of Jesus in the royal line of David, the fulfillment of Old Testament prophecy in the life of Jesus, stated in the context of Hebrew Aramaic tradition and language, and finally, Jesus' demonstration of his divinity in his prophecies of events yet to come. Additionally, I have reviewed some of the major quotations and events which are unique to St. Matthew's Gospel, and finally closed just moments ago with a discussion of Jesus' lecture on the meaning of judgment based on works in chapter 25, pointing out how sharply this contrasts with the expectations of the Pharisees, whom he had criticized in chapter 23. I hope that this revised edition of the New Testament Gospels, with a new format and many examples of church art over the centuries, will enable listeners and viewers in their understanding of the unique contributions of St. Matthew. The illustration, Matthew writing his Gospel, is a last quarter 15th century illumination in colored inks and gold on German watermarked paper from a Gospel book made in Russia and attributed to the monk Michael Medovartsev from manuscript Egerton 3045 in the British Library, London, England.
Other AIC resources on topics discussed in this episode are from the Great O Antiphons, an AIC seasonal video series in 7 episodes, Episode 4, O Clavis David, or Key of David, for December 21st, explores Jesus' lineage from King David. In Epiphany, the Manifestation of Christ to the Gentiles, a seasonal video presentation in 3 episodes, the Parable of the Wheat and the Tares, based upon Matthew 13:24-30, the Gospel reading for 5th Sunday after Epiphany, is discussed in Episode 3. The podcast homily for the same Sunday is linked from the podcast homilies page. From Jessima, the pre-Lenten season, presented in 3 episodes, the Parable of the Laborers in the Vineyard, the Gospel reading for Septuagesima Sunday, based on Matthew 21-16, is discussed in Episode 1. The podcast homily for the same Sunday is linked from the podcast homilies page. From the Nicene Creed, a Christian education video series in 8 episodes, discussion of the phrase, sitteth at the right hand of the Father, is found in Episode 6. From the Lord's Prayer Phrase by Phrase, which has 2 episodes, discussion of the differences between St. Matthew and St. Luke's versions of the Lord's Prayer is found in Episode 2. From the Lives of the Saints, from the first series, St. John is the focus of Episode 4, Peter of Episode 11, Matthew of Episode 14, and Luke of Episode 15. In other episodes of the New Testament Gospels, from the Gospel of St. John, there is St. John's unique discussion of Jesus' appearance in the upper room and his granting the apostles authority to forgive sins, discussed in episode 45. From the AIC Bookstore publications, the Gospel of Matthew, annotated and illustrated, includes discussion of the entire text of Matthew's Gospel with special emphasis on the five discourses of Matthew. Topics discussed in this episode are from chapters 5, 6, and 7, the Beatitudes and the entire Sermon on the Mount, from chapter 9, the four unique scenes or miracles, from chapters 13, 18, and 20, the kingdom parables, and the discussion of the dispute resolution within the church and Jesus' use of the word church, the woe to declaration in chapter 23, and from chapter 24, the final or the Olivet discourse and its unique parables and lessons on judgment by works. From Layman's Lexicon, words and phrases of interest are binding and loosing, blessed, church, commandments, confession, judgment, kingdom, parable, prophet/prophecy, the right hand of God, righteous/righteousness, shepherd, and son of man. From the Prayer Book Psalter, History Text and Commentary, Psalm 1, the Two Ways Psalm, the text and commentary on its usage in the 1928 Book of Common Prayer is found on pages 1 to 2. From Christian Spirituality and Anglican Perspective, the meaning of blessedness in all its forms, with special focus on all the uses of blessed be, blessed is, blessed are, including the two ways concept of Psalm 1, is the focus of Part 3 on pages 31 to 62. From Revelation, an Idealist Interpretation, references to the churches of Asia Minor and the term Son of Man and its origin in the prophetic book of Daniel are discussed in chapters 1, 2, and 3. From Writing Prophets of the Old Testament, themes and quotations from Daniel with illustrations are discussed in Part 2, Chapter 4, on pages 34 to 58, which include the text box Theophanies, Images of Christ and God the Father, on page 47, and the full text of the Second Canon writings from the Septuagint text of Daniel, on pages 50 to 58. Finally, there is Father Ron's blog, a page on our website featuring information on the latest projects, videos, and publications. Entries generally include an illustration from the featured series. You can reach the blog page using the links at the top or the bottom of any page, or by entering the direct URL address on your screen. By clicking on the Follow Anglican Internet Church Legend in the right-hand column and afterward entering your email address, you can receive notice of each new posting from our site host, WordPress.com. Please be assured that we do not share emails with any other organization. Thank you for joining me for Episode 6 of the New Testament Gospels. Next time, in Episode 7, I begin discussion of the Gospel of Mark with an introduction and discussion of themes, beginning with Jesus as servant. Until next time, may the Lord bless and keep you. May the Lord make His face to shine upon you and be merciful to you. May the Lord lift up His countenance upon you and give you peace. Amen. This program has been a presentation of the Anglican Internet Church. We invite you to visit our website and use its resources at www.anglicaninternetchurch.net.